brisket, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio for your All Cardinals show. And I'm your host, Jess Root. I got on the line Seth Cox, and we're going to talk Cardinals today. All Cardinals after a Monday night win in which the Cardinals defeated the Baltimore Ravens on the big stage 26-18. It was closer than it should have been, and it came down to the wire. But that's what we're going to talk about. We're recording on a Wednesday night rather than Tuesday night as they had the later game on Monday. And so here we go. Seth Cox, how's it going? How does it feel in Cardinal land these days?
You know, it was an enjoyable night. We smoked a 18-pound brisket, and we had a test run of a projector on our garage for Halloween, and we watched the game outside in our front yard, surrounded by numerous neighbors that decided to watch the game that way as it unfolded. So it was a lot of fun, and coming away with the win was probably the only satisfying ending to an otherwise enjoyable evening.
Well, let's go ahead and talk. We've got a few topics to go over. In terms of what we saw from the Arizona Cardinals, they fell behind early. Rallied, then pulled away. Looked like that they had put the game away, and then things got interesting. A blocked punt, which led to a touchdown. The Cardinals trying to run down the clock, don't quite do it, and it comes down to the Ravens down by 8. They drive down the field, and it takes a Tony Jefferson interception in the end zone to end the threat. And the Cardinals improved to 5-2, sending Baltimore Ravens back home to 1-6. And the theme in the locker room from pretty much every player, Bruce Arians, and everyone involved was they finished a game. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Did they really finish? Should they have played better? We're going to talk about some individual players who stood out. What were the plays that stood out? Talk about the injury situation, where they're at right now, and then look a little bit ahead to the Browns this weekend, who are the Cardinals will travel to Cleveland and finish the first half of their schedule and enter the bye week. Ideally, they'll be 6-2. But let's go ahead and get started. So, Seth, let's talk about the question first. Everyone say, hey, they won a game the way they wanted to. They finally won a close one. And while that is true, and it's they almost needed to have that again, but the theme was they finished a game. They finally finished a game. Did they really finish a game?
Well, defensively, yeah, I think so. Clearly, offensively, they didn't. You and I talked about it a little bit off the air. I tweeted about it during the game, and then a little bit yesterday. Two of the dumbest plays you will see a well-coached and, you know, overall very intelligent team make in Andre Ellington running out of bounds on his big third down swing pass, and then Carson Palmer inexplicably throwing intentional grounding on a second down kill shot type play. You know, you can critique the play call itself in that situation. I got what they were trying to do. They were trying to end the game. And honestly, I think the combination of Arians and Palmer sometimes causes those type of decisions to be made, because Arians has just a little too much belief, maybe is the word. I don't know. And Palmer and his decision-making, And sometimes, every once in a while, Carson goes back to Cincinnati Bengals Carson and just does something inexplicably stupid. And I think that was that second down play in the fourth quarter with about 2 minutes to go where at that point, just fall down, take a sack. I mean, if nobody's open, just fall down. Like, who cares? The clock keeps running. They can't stop the clock. Even if it's third and 20, you run the ball and, you know, it would have got to the two-minute warning, and then you run the ball and it's, you know, down under...
down a minute 20-ish.
They're gonna get, they're going to get about 55 seconds after you punt. So, just a dumb play. I mean, two of the dumber plays that you will just see from this Cardinals team, hopefully all year. Like, hopefully you don't see anything like that again, because that was really inexcusable to end the game, because, you know, they put the defense in a bad situation where Joe Flacco, who's done it a lot in his career, including on a run to the Super Bowl, had the ball back with a lot of time on the clock. And, you know, I don't want to say lucky, but the defense came back and was able to make a play, and I think that's what you're happy with. You saw the defense close. Now, I think you wanted to see the offense close that game out, if we're both being completely honest. I think we wanted to see them be able to take the knees and be done with the game, but I think overall you're encouraged with the efficiency of the offense for, 95% of the game, and the defense closing out the game and really, you know, shutting down a not very good Ravens offense, but dangerous in the fact that they have Steve Smith still, and he's still one of the, you know, best playmakers at wide receiver in the NFL.
The end of that game reminded me of a couple games that we've seen. It reminded me of the Philadelphia game last year when they had the go-ahead touchdown. But it was different because they had rallied and taken the lead. And then it took down to the last just couple of plays where we saw Tyrann Mathieu bat away a ball on a very athletic play. We saw Deion Buchanan make one of his best plays in coverage all season. And then Rashad Johnson just level... I believe it was Jordan Matthews there at the sideline before he could get his feet down to end the threat. And that was a great defensive stop. And they moved down the field. Nick Foles took him down the field. This was the same sort of thing. And when I was there after the game, I kept wondering if they finished. They finished. I keep wondering, did they really finish? Because they had control of the game. And then they sort of fell apart in many ways. And so I don't know if it call that finishing, except for, yes, the defense ultimately held up. So yeah, that's sort of finished, but at the same time, they didn't, because they were in a position where they were fine. They made themselves have adversity, essentially. They created the adversity for themselves. Now, that being said, they had adversity, and NFL games come down to that frequently. You have adversity. How do you face it? It looked like the Cardinals were going to crumble, and they didn't. Down the stretch, the defense play. And in fairness, there was the big play, the one big play that Justin Bethel gave up because he thought they had safety help over the top. Okay, that was a mistake. The tight end throw, Tony Jefferson covered better, but that was an absolute amazing play by Flacco to begin with. After that, the defense did their job. And I don't want to discount what the Ravens did, because that's sort of been the Ravens thing all year. Now, if you look at them, they're 1-6, and that's the type of team you are. But if you look at the team, the numbers say they're a good offensive team. They've got a top tier quarterback in Joe Flacco. They're lean on skill position players, but they have one of the top running backs in the league in terms of production. They had a top 10 rush defense. They were getting sacks. They were giving up big plays. And offensively, basically, Joe Flacco, if any of you listeners had caught my preview show last week with Matthew Stevens from Baltimore Beatdown, what they said is that Joe Flacco and the offense are keeping the team in games that they have no business being in, and that's basically what happened here. The game was put away, there was a mistake the Cardinals made, and then the Ravens took advantage, and ultimately they lost. The Ravens have been losing games close that shouldn't have been blowouts, and they've been losing games close that they probably should have won as well. So in the end, it was a typical game the Ravens did. They were a desperate team. They came in. They fought hard early, fell behind late, and then rallied frantically only to see them lose. So they sort of finished. They sort of didn't.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you're obviously, I think you can only say that you're disappointed overall by the fact that the Cardinals let a 1-5 team that, you know, they're just not really that good. Like you said, they have Flacco, who's you know, what, a top 12 quarterback, probably. They have Steve Smith, who's, you know, probably still a top 10, 15 receiver in the NFL. And they have Justin Forsett, who's, you know, a top 10 running back in the NFL. But then the offensive line is not very good. The other skill position players are not very good. And you know, I thought that the loss of Jerod Powers hurt more than anybody ever wants to admit, because I don't know why people still dislike Jerod Powers.
He's not Patrick Peterson, and so he'll give up some plays. But
yeah,
he's good. He's been a starter, except for last year. He's been a starter all his NFL career. He's smart, and we'll talk a little bit later, because yes, you get Bethel to get the chance. He's athletically, he's more gifted than Bethel. But what? He's more gifted than Bethel. He's more gifted than Powers. So. But what you're going to see, Powers knows where to be. And he also is not afraid to mix it up in the running game.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think I saw this talk a lot after the game, and I'm sure you saw it too on Twitter. And there's this very divisive idea among fans that there's one group of fans that, you know, say, well, they won, so who cares how they won, you know. And then there's another group of fans that say, yeah, they won, but did you see how they barely beat a 1-5, now 1-6, you know, Ravens team that at the end was without their starting left side of their offensive line? And, you know, and so I see both sides of it. Like, I get it. You are disappointed in the fact that after game one, when you saw them just beat down Chicago and San Francisco, I think that created a false sense of this is a juggernaut team, and they're not. They're not. They're a very good team. You and I talked about last week. They may be just outside of the top two. In the New England, Green Bay, they may be in that next five category, which is fine. I mean, they're in with the Cincinnati and Denver and those teams. But I think everybody is expecting them to blow everybody out, and that's just not who this team is. They still have some brain farts. They have lapses of offensive ability. And they still do get they still lack a pass rush consistently enough to kind of quell other offenses. And so I think when you see, you know, put all those things together, you're going to get games like this where, you know, really it should have probably been in the 30s to, you know, 12 or whatever, you know, 13, whatever the Ravens would have had. But it ended up being 26-18, and the Ravens or the Cardinals, you know, made a great play at the end of the game to seal it.
Should they have played better? Yes, the Cardinals should have played better. But overall, if you look at it, special teams, they played well defensively. You look at the numbers, They held the Ravens to under 300 yards of offense. They kept Justin Forsett in check. They forced a turnover late. The defense played well. The offense played well. It was this time, it was special teams that made the mistakes. We saw Chandler Catanzaro miss an early field goal. You really can't blame a guy missing a 55-yard field goal. You really normally can't. That's the type of kick that Bruce Arians normally avoided and would go ahead and punt away. Maybe it was just sort of a feeling of his way out. But then Catanzaro also missed an extra point. That extra point ended up being the difference in the game. He makes that extra point. It doesn't matter because then it's a 17-point lead and they'd have to score three times no matter what. Then you have the punt block and it's just a mess of things. And yes, we know fans, you hate Drew Butler. We understand. But we're not going to see a change this year. Just don't expect it. He does well enough with the type of punter he is and the type of offense that they have. But, you know, this time it was a blocking mistake. Yeah, Butler probably should have gotten the ball away quicker, but it didn't really look like he had a lot of hope either because that rush came fast and furious at him. Should they have played better? Yes, but overall, you look at how they played. The feel was worse than the actual overall performance because that game was beginning to go away. It was starting to get away. That last score that the Cardinals had, yeah, game over. Were it not for, if Butler gets that punt off, we're not talking about this today.
Yeah, and I think, I long snapped when I was in high school. That was really the only thing I was good at after I got hurt. And from my perspective, it's one of those things where you're disappointed in the fact that the punter just takes so long to get the ball off. And that was a complaint last year, if I remember right? Like, didn't he have he had one block last year and a couple almost blocked?
There were two, maybe another one almost. But in both of those cases, it was dreadful blocking. Robert Hughes completely just let a guy go. But, you know, he seems to be a slower developing punter in his...
Yeah, he's very methodical in his approach. And, you know, so that was what it was. Like I said, you can't, you know, in the end it doesn't matter because they won. But like you said, yeah, he gets that punt off. Maybe they score again, but you're talking maybe, 2 minutes left in the game, and then they have to try for an onside kick. As opposed to 5 or almost 5 minutes left in the game. So, you know, it was just, like I said, there's a lot of just plays that I don't think we're going to see repeated. And when I say that...
You hope.
I hope that we don't see... Like, if we see these plays repeated again, then there's, you know, probably some questions to be asked overall. But I think because it was kind of a one-time bunch of brain farts type thing, you're like, okay, it was one time, big stage. Clearly, the nerves got to a couple guys. I think you're disappointed in that it got to Palmer and Ellington, but it is what it is. And I'm interested to see how much in the doghouse Andre Ellington is now after that play because Bruce Arians did not seem happy.
No, though, and then the quote the next day, that's junior high football there. That was interesting. Now, in the end, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out because he went from Bruce Arians' darling to now a guy that seems to be the third running back overall. In the end, he got more touches than you would have thought he would have because he became the fourth quarter running back, essentially. But that's something to look at moving forward. I like, you know, ultimately, they played well. They had a couple of gaps, but they played well. It's the type of thing that you want to see them. Sure, they give up the points early. They give up the lead again, but then they pull further ahead. Looks like it's got to put it away. Yeah, I can handle with those type of games all year. Those are the type of games that they're going to win, and I think they're going to win against anyone. It was good to see that offensively they really didn't have any of the yips. It wasn't the complete hot or cold. That's actually what was kind of good to see. They weren't death lightning just amazing in the red zone like the 16-17 in their four previous wins, and they weren't completely just awful in the red zone. They were fine. Well, the 2 or 4. You know, like a pretty much like a normal NFL team, and they were able to win. And again, because outside the couple of gaffes, that's an otherwise convincing win. They if you look at the line, they were favored by 9.5 entering the game, and they easily would have cleared that if it weren't for that block punt.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at outside of the special teams gaffe and then obviously the two plays on the end, I think a couple of plays stand out. And we'll skip, I mean, you can talk about the Chris Johnson sit-down run if you'd like to, but I think that's just one of those heads-up slash fluke plays that occurs. So, but on the other hand, I think that touchdown run, and was that the first quarter or the second quarter? I can't remember timing of it exactly. That was by far his best run of the season.
Oh, that run was fantastic.
I think that's the back you have now. Like, when people think about Chris Johnson, they still think about this guy that runs a 4.2, 40, and just, you know, blazes. And I've had people tweet me on my timeline, like, man, Chris Johnson's running angry. And I honestly think the year off, maybe, quote-unquote, was good for him. Because I think when he went to New York, he had to redevelop his style. And he had to learn to run angry. And from there, he's become a guy that can, you know, now... He is that grinder between the tackles. Yeah, he still has a little bit of explosiveness, but most of his work is going to be the dirty work in between the tackles, and he's going to gain, you know, 4 to 5 yards of carry and break a couple, you know, 20, 25 yards. Let's remember, he got up and started running, and yeah, there was one guy that was kind of away from him and stuff, but two guys, John Brown and that cornerback, caught him on that play. And that was, to me, that kind of signifies the fact that you're just not going to get the breakaways that you used to get from Chris Johnson. And that's okay. You have David Johnson and Andre Ellington for those things. But what you have in Chris Johnson is you have a guy that in three quarters gained, you know, three quarters of gameplay, you know, he might have had a couple carries in the fourth quarter, but most of his work came in those three quarters.
Yeah, he had 121 yards, I think it was 121 yards in three quarters, and then that's when Ellen came in. I think he had two or three other carries for 1 yard after that, but yeah, he did that. Now, granted, half of that was all on that one fluky, strange run, but still, it was really good running.
Yeah, and I think you're fine with that because you look at that one fluky run, right? And so that's, he had 15 carries, right? 15 for 123?
Yes.
Or whatever it was. So 15 for 123, you take out 62, you're still at 14 for, you know, 61. You're okay with those numbers.
Yep, you are.
Like, that's
certainly
5 yards of carry. So nobody's going to complain about 5 yards of carry. So I think his emergence is important going forward, but I also think it's interesting, and I don't know if it's going to stay this way, because like I said, Arians seemed very not happy after the game, or, you know, the next day, but I also think it's interesting that they're kind of doing the whole thunder and lightning thing, but backwards, right? Like, they're using Chris Johnson for three quarters to wear down the defense, and then bringing in Andre Ellington, where most teams go to their, you know, quote-unquote power back in the fourth quarter to kind of salt away the game. Arians is doing the opposite, and that, I think it's, you know, innovative, and so far, outside of the just one dumb play, I think it's worked. So, you know, it makes sense, because what it does is it wears down the defense, and then all of a sudden,
Andre Ellington comes in. You've got a guy who can outrun you.
Yeah, you bring in a guy in Andre Ellington who, you know, let's be honest, is a finesse runner, and that's not a negative thing. And so he can come in and he can gain, you know, make those big plays and get outside and outrun people, and I think that's what we're seeing. And, you know, I don't think we can give enough credit to what the run blocking on the offensive line, especially the left side, is doing right now. I think when you just look at what Jared Valdir and Mikey Potty, and yeah, you Potty got that one play where what's the middle linebacker, the young middle linebacker name for
Mosley.
The Ravens? Yeah, C.J. Mosley just, you know, kind of bodied him and then got off and made a play on a run play. He tried to pull through the hole and just got hit and stumbled and fell. But you know what? Upati has been the best offensive lineman on this team since he came back. And I think that you look at San Francisco in a juxtaposition and how bad their offensive line is. And yeah, I know Anthony Davis retired as well, but I think the loss of Upati is doing more. The loss of Upati for the 49ers and the addition of Upati for the Cardinals, I think you see why the Cardinals are also in what, the third-ranked run team in the NFL, and why the 49ers all of a sudden are in that back half at the 18 spot, despite probably having the better running back in Carlos Hyde.
True. Other players that stood out, I thought Carson Palmer played, he had a couple of throws that weren't great, but you're not going to make every throw perfect, as we've seen even Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. He's not going to make every throw perfectly, but he was making good throws. So there were some throws that were absolutely fantastic, that long play to John Brown. That was a perfectly thrown ball, perfectly placed for him to run under. You didn't know as you let the ball go, how in the world is that play going to work, and it did. He's been playing at such a high level overall when it comes to ball placements. He did have, of course, the penalty, but Palmer just looks really good this year. And he continues, Pro Football Focus continues to give him low. He's still their highest-rated quarterback of the season. And noting, if you're not familiar with Pro Football Focus, they grade each play based on who makes an impact. Did that player make it? It was a play made because someone else made the impact? Was it Palmer that gave it a plus? Was Palmer neutral for what he did, or did he impact the play negatively? And so what they're seeing is that Palmer's play, whether you agree with the grade or not, is that he is making more positive impacts on plays than any other quarterback in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback. Tom Brady is a better quarterback. But what you're seeing from Palmer is more positive impacts on plays from him to make plays happen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you hit on it. Palmer played very well. I thought all three wide receivers played well. We were joking about it at our watch party. Holy cow, did Michael Floyd made a run after the catch. Like, that was something that we haven't seen.
It's been a couple of years, but he's playing. Yeah. And finally, you mentioned the very poor body language in Chicago. He's coming around, he's performing, and he seems to be much more focused. The touchdown play, now that was a great throw by Palmer, and it was a great route by Floyd to get off the line quick. As Seattle fans will note, that's almost the exact same play that ended the Super Bowl, sadly for them. But Palmer knew exactly where to put it. He put a lot of zip in that ball right on Floyd's chest, who had just enough space. And you could see before the play, the Baltimore defenders knew what was coming and couldn't defend it.
Yeah, and that's what you want to see. You want to see, you know, I think we're all to the, well, maybe not all of us, but I think most of us are to the point where we understand that, Floyd is not Larry Fitzgerald. Like, he's not going to get to that, you know, expert route runner, take over the game with your technical ability type guy. But what he can be is he can be Vincent Jackson, you know, Mike Evans, all those big body receivers who are able to make plays going up and competing and you know, kind of, to use a basketball reference, boxing out the other guy and just making a play on the ball. And I think you're okay with that. Like, you got to be okay with the fact that he's not really a one. He is mostly a two.
But you got a team with two ones, so.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. In this offense, he's really a three, and that's kind of okay, right?
Like, it is. Well, you can't really blame him for where he is when you still have Larry Fitzgerald playing the level he is this year. And then you have the development of John Brown. You can't expect much more from Floyd because he's only getting looks as the number three guy.
Right, and so you have to be happy with that. I think, I think we're seeing why Chris Johnson won the position one at running back, and why Andre Ellington's kind of getting those carries at the end of the game too. I think that as much talent as David Johnson has in his being, it's just the speed of the game and the understanding of the game. There's hesitations on inside runs, so you want to see that development. But offensively, I think that this team is, I don't know if they can, like, I think they can have clearly better games. I think, you know, we saw in Chicago and San Francisco, they can have better overall games, but I don't know if they can do that consistently, because, you know, 40 plus points is just, that's a lot. So
yeah.
I don't think that's a fair, you know, expectation, but 26 points is a lot too in the NFL. And I think that's a fair, that's where we expect them to be every week. And so, like you said, Floyd may have two or three games in a row where he scores a touchdown, and then he might go three or four games like he did this season where he only has one catch. And that's okay, because, you know, Larry's the guy that's going to every week have 5 and 60. I shouldn't just say Larry. Larry and John are going to have 5 and 60 every week, if not more. So it's just a dependent on what they're able to do production-wise and attempts-wise in getting Floyd involved. So with the weapons they have, I think you're seeing how good this offense can be. But even when it's not, you know, quote-unquote, hitting on all cylinders, I think you can see how efficient and quick scoring they can be as well.
Let's look at some of the players defensively. Obviously, the player who shined the brightest on Monday night was Tyrann Mathieu, making plays behind the line of scrimmage. He had the sack, he had the tackle for loss when he just leveled the receiver. And on that reverse, all I could think is one of two things. Goodness, he knew exactly what was coming. Or two, if that were play action and not a reverse, Joe Flacco's dead.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we saw 2 years ago from Tyrann we didn't see last year, and it was clearly just a combination of injuries. And I think you're at the point where you wonder if this kid can be Troy Polamalu, or, you know, and don't kill me for this, but if he ends up being Bob Sanders, the defensive player of the year for the Colts, who was so good,
just couldn't stay healthy.
But yeah, and so I think that's where you're at with him, because talent level, I don't think there's a question, right? Like, and I'm talking about, I'm comparing a third-year guy who is has he played it even in 25 games yet? You know, to guys that are multiple-time Defensive Player of the Year winners. So, understand that I think that we're talking about, by the end of this year, we're going to be talking about Matthew being one of the top five defensive players in the NFL. And that's, you know, that's what the expectations are for him. And he kind of, you know, well, not kind of, but he showed that this week, and I think you're going to continue to see that.
And you look at, let's take a look at guys like Daewon Buchanan showed up again. He's all over the place, and that's sort of by scheme now. I think what we're seeing now is exactly how Ray Horton and Todd Bowles plan things around Darrell Washington because of his speed and his ability to go side to side. They're kind of doing the same thing. Betcher's doing the same thing with Daewon Buchanan. He's blowing up plays, and they know they have to protect him a little bit because he's not linebacker size, but he's always making an impact on games, and the fact that their secondary is so good that they don't even need him to play secondary. But I love how he plays. We saw positive contributions over, not over just a couple of plays, but over a span of the ball game from Marcus Golden in terms of disruption. And then we saw some good Dwight Freeney, and it's real promising to see, wait, with him starting, is the motor going? Are we going to start seeing a Dwight Freeney of old? Or are we going to see an old Dwight Freeney where he shows up, flashes a couple of plays, and disappears? Because as it is right now, Lamar Woodley, wow, he's old. And he's slow. I wonder what happens without Alex Ofricker comes back. Are they going to move Golden into that Woodley role, or will he sit back and basically take a back seat to Lamar and to Freeney?
Yeah, it is going to be interesting, especially in pass rush situations, because I think you can't really go wrong with any of the three, like Golden, Woodley, or Okafor as your start, or, you know, your base, whatever the base is for the Cardinals. But in pass rushing situations, I'm interested to see, because I think Freeney is the only, like, has-to-be-out-there guy. I think the rest of the time, you just kind of play the hot hand, right? Like, Golden had a nice game in the pressures department, and then Okafor, yeah. And then Okafor's had, you know, had a couple okay games. And so I think that's the way you go about it. And you know, Freeney, too, can be in that rotation, whereas if he's not necessarily clicking, you can kind of move away from him that game. But I think when you have a base of three that are interchangeable, then you don't have to worry about it. So I think that's where they're at right now for those three.
And I like what I like best when they go to their pass rushing nickel where they've got the two edge guys. I think once Okafor is healthy, that'd be a really nice combo where you've got Freeney who still has the elite skill. He doesn't have it all the time, with a guy with Okafor who's just a notch under that, who does cause disruption on his own and has to get attention, but is also really good at cleaning things up. I only could imagine what that would have looked like a season ago had John Abraham been able to stay at some sort of level near what he was in 2013, to have both Abraham and Okafor playing. And that's the sort of thing, if you can get Freeney and Okafor playing the same way, that really is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it is, and I think you have to be excited for the defense as a whole. One guy we haven't talked about a lot, and I think that's kind of been what his season is, and that's okay, is Kevin Minter. He's steadily good, I think. Maybe good. Yeah, I think you can say good. He's steadily solid. There you go.
And the main thing is this. Everyone thought Sean Weatherspoon was going to have this great year. He's playing well enough to keep him on the bench all year.
Was he inactive?
He was inactive for a game. It was actually, you can probably blame Weatherspoon in part for the blocked punt, because he got called for a false start on the, he was the guy penalized, which caused them to have to repunt.
Okay. Yeah, so I am interested in that because, you know, he's really good in the box still. And you know, I think we've come to a point to realize that he's probably not going to be, you know, the every down quarter, every down safety. But that's okay, right? Like, he's good enough and he's consistent enough in what he does that you don't have to worry about that. And so,
and he hasn't been a liability in coverage either. Have we seen a play where we're going, oh my gosh, Minter? No, we haven't seen that in half a season.
No, but I think a lot of that is, like you said, they scheme very well for him, and they don't, because they don't really not that great in coverage still. Like, that's the one thing.
He flashes, and, he flashes.
Yeah, but I mean, he gave up the touchdown to the fullback where he didn't even go out. Like, he just completely forgot he was supposed to be in coverage.
Yeah.
You know, you can laugh about it because they won, so, you know, no big deal.
That was week one all over again, where they had two guys and they didn't. Who was the peelback guy? Going back to Golden, it was interesting. I thought for sure that they were going to use that fullback running back screen to Golden's side of the field a lot. I thought they were going to exploit that because we know the type of player he is. He's an over pursuer. He's a motor guy, and I was surprised. I thought they got away with it once or twice in the first quarter, and it didn't happen again other than, you know, the touchdown play when that wasn't even Golden.
Yeah, and, you know, let's be honest, offensive coordinators are, in general, pretty dumb, and they make a lot of dumb decisions throughout the game, because I think they get to the point where they go, oh, okay, they're going to be expecting this, so I'm going to call a play that they're not expecting. And then it was probably like, you know, you probably just run that play 10 or 12 times and see if they adjust before you decide that, like, oh, we better not call that play again because they're expecting it. Because if you run the same play twice and it works for good yardage, then what's the harm in trying it again until it doesn't work? So, but it worked out for the Cardinals, and, you know, it's one of those things. I think the other thing that we have to mention is Patrick Peterson is, you know, special this year.
And
that was important because I think Steve Smith got the best of him, a couple crossing routes. But, I mean, honestly, in today's NFL, that is so, so hard to win and stuff like that. So you know, you can't be too upset with him.
No.
But overall,
but you look at the way he's playing, he is just blanket. And the play, if you look at what the Ravens have done, Steve Smith is like 75% of their offense. Every time they drop back to pass, Joe Flacco looks at number 89 first every single time, and he was completely taken out of the game.
Yep, and I think that's where you have to be at this point, is what, you know, what is he able to do for this team? As opposed to, you know, last year where you're saying, okay, if he's going to get beat big this game, how much is he going to struggle, blah, blah, blah. And so I think you're satisfied with the overall approach of this team, you know, through the individuals. Another guy we haven't even mentioned who was a monster again was Calais Campbell, and just how great he was in that game. And so, I think in that you have to be excited, and this team is very talented, so you're waiting to see where exactly this takes you.
In terms of plays that stood out, there are a couple that really kind of went the wrong way for the Ravens. One was the tackle non-tackle 62-yard run by Chris Johnson. And understandably so. I completely understand where John Harbaugh is coming from there, because say a guy hits him or jumps on top of the pile because the whistle wasn't there, he probably does get flagged or fined. But at the same time, the whistle didn't blow, so there was nothing wrong with what Johnson did. It was very smart. Johnson was right, and the call was right, because there was no whistle. His knee hadn't gone down. He hadn't given up on the play. He got up, didn't hear a whistle, and ran. At the same time, based on what the rules are, John Harbaugh is right to be upset. But that's one of those things, how much it impacted the game, especially because the Cardinals only got a field goal out of it, and they probably would have gone down and gotten a field goal out of that drive anyway. So it's hard to say that was super impactful.
Well, and let's just play that same hypothetical, and that, you know, they do hit him, and all of a sudden it's a 15-yard tack on. So, you know, I get where Ravens fans are upset. I do. And when you're 1-6, things snowball. So the tackle eligible, clearly he reported as eligible. Everybody in the stadium and on the broadcast saw it. The only person that didn't was the only person that mattered. And that's just one of those unfortunate realities of football. And, you know, the same thing with that non-call. You know, like I said, if he hits him, we're talking about 15 yards, and the Ravens are crying about the fact that he wasn't down. So I just think it's one of those things, one of those situations where, you know, it's what I say to Cardinals fans when, you know, over the two losses where you've seen a lot of complaining about officiating and, you know, St. Louis got the benefit of the calls and then Pittsburgh got the benefit of the calls. It always seems like the team that loses is the one complaining about the calls being missed.
Now, in fairness, refereeing, the officiating this year has been bad.
No, but it's been bad every way. Like, it's consistently bad. And it's consistently bad for every team. So you have to make plays. Like, if you're Joe Flacco, you can't throw the ball up into the end zone with 13 seconds left, or however long was left, right? Like, you can't do that. You throw the ball out of the back of the end zone, or you just, you know, drift and throw. You know, you do something else. You can't throw the ball into play into the middle of the end zone. That's just not a smart football play. He got away with it the play before, or, you know, two plays before, but it just was not a smart football play. So, you know, it's the same thing. You know, the Cardinals had a chance to win despite the refs, you know, trying to screw them over for four quarters in Pittsburgh, and Carson Palmer threw an interception. And it's the same thing. Like, Ravens, you guys had a chance to win at the end of the game, and your quarterback threw an interception in the end zone. Trust us. We know how that feels. It happened the week before. So, like, you can't, like, that's my whole point. You can't complain about officiating when you have a chance to win or tie the game in the closing moments, and you just, you know, you can't even say you choke. You just make a dumb play, and you make a dumb throw. And it was the same thing Palmer did the week before, and it is what it is, and it's over with now. And you know, now the Cardinals get to move on to Cleveland, and hopefully not Johnny Manziel. I really hope not.
It doesn't look like it, but, you know, we'll see. Though, honestly, Johnny Manziel against that Cardinals secondary, that would be fun. That would really be fun. I want to see Johnny Manziel play because Johnny Manziel. But,
well, and that's why I want to see him play, too, but I don't want to see him play against the Cardinals, because what is the one thing that, you know, has kind of hurt them this year are quarterbacks that you go, huh? Like, Landon Jones and Nick Foles? Really? Like, you're able to take out Drew Brees and, you know, Colin Kaepernick and, you know, even Mike Vick. Yeah, Jay Cutler. Like, but you get lit up by Nick Foles and Landry Jones. So, yeah, so, you know, knowing that, I'd rather see Josh McCown, because at least then we know, you know, he's going to throw a couple bad picks and do some dumb stuff.
We look at the injury situation for the Cardinals. A whole bunch of players did not practice on Wednesday, but the Cardinals aren't doing pads at all this week because of the short week and then entering the bye. They kind of want to go into the game fresh and be able to go into the bye healthy. Really, the only injury of concern is that of Jerod Powers, who hurt his hamstring. Gonna miss a couple of weeks, so that maybe it's only one game. But what this means is that Sunday we're gonna see a lot of Justin Bethel, and for all of you fans who've been waiting, now's the time. And you might, I imagine, we're gonna see them go after Justin Bethel a lot, and we're gonna see some good Justin Bethel, and we might see some gaffes like the big play he gave up in the final drive because he just didn't have the reps. He didn't have the he. There was a miscommunication on defense. He thought there was coverage behind him where there wasn't. So, but just keep in mind, Cardinals fans, Bethel's not better than Powers. Otherwise, he would be playing. And we all know that Bruce Arians plays favorites, but there hasn't been a case where, as far as we can tell, a player who is clearly better than the guy who's already in the lineup isn't playing. Because that's stupid football. You don't just sit guys down who are better for fun. So just remember that. Jerod Powers, for all his defects, and he's had a good year, he's better than Justin Bethel.
Well, I mean, outside of our old friend Rashard Mendenhall playing a lot, yeah, that's true. the thing I worry about this week, and people, you know, if you play fantasy football, you've obviously been following this guy, but you look at Gary Barnage and what he's done at the tight end position this year, and honestly, I'm kind of concerned because the Cardinals haven't really had to face a big tight end yet. So
they've given up the least fantasy points to tight ends this season. Take that, everyone. Who says they can't cover tight ends, but they don't have to cover tight ends because they don't play any of them this year yet.
Yeah, so I am interested to see what Gary Barnage does. And then, lucky for the Cardinals, you know, they have Travis Gabriel or Taylor Gabriel. Gabriel's lost now, I can't remember. And he's excellent. He's got some John Brown in him, you know, undersized, but just flies down the field. And so those two things, you know, it'll be interesting to see if that's who Peterson shadows, a la Steve Smith, and they did in the game early, and we'll see what happens there. Or if they play sides, because they kind of had played sides a little bit this year. And then I saw this week that Peterson was doing a little more traveling with Smith in the game. So we'll see what happens there. The running game, Duke Johnson, a guy that I love coming out of Miami, is extremely underutilized in the passing game by the Browns, but when he is used, I think it was 2 weeks ago or something like that, he had almost 100 yards receiving and a touchdown, and then he had, you know, another like 45 yards rushing. So he's got a little Andre Ellington in him, but he also has the similar fact that he can't stay healthy. So, well, you know, we'll see what happens there.
And I was just talking to some Ohio radio guys. I was on a show in Akron this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, and the feeling is this. Anyone can run the football on Cleveland. And I said, well, in fairness, that was Todd Gurley. And they're like, well, Justin Forsett dropped 180 on. It's like, basically, they think anyone can run the ball on Cleveland. And the feeling in Cleveland is that they're the Browns yet again. And kind of like if you're looking at the last 8-9 weeks of the season, the over-under they're setting the game is 3. And that's, I thought maybe that's a push right there. They might win 3 games the rest of the year. This is a game the Cardinals should win fairly easily. I don't expect the blowout, but I expect them to be in control at some point in the second half and pull away. Even if it's close early, I think this is the game they should pull away and stay ahead. and, you know, not necessarily have to have adversity late in the game.
Oh, I agree completely. Like, you know, my co-host on the draft podcast is a Browns fan, and we text daily, and that's one of the things that we've actually talked about is that he said to me the other night, like, if you guys don't beat us by, you know, two touchdowns, then you're not playing well. and it's just kind of the fact that they're just not very good right now. They struggle to do a lot of things, mainly, as you talked about, stop the run. I think you're talking about the 31st ranked rush defense in the NFL, and they've been that way in both of Mike Patine's years at coach, so definitely not a personnel thing. It's more of a scheme thing, but, you know, that's none of my business. So if you're a fantasy football player, which I'm assuming everybody in the world is.
I'm not. I don't like fantasy football, sorry. I deal too much with real football. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm that
guy. Play Chris Johnson this week. You know, and it probably, like, if you're in a pinch with a bye, probably wouldn't hurt to play David Johnson this week.
In fact, play all the Cardinals. Play Carson Palmer. Yeah, play John Brown. Play Chris Johnson. Make it an all-Cardinals offense except as a tight end. Jermaine Gresham's not going to give you anything.
Yeah, but, I mean, honestly, like, this is one of those games that when you look at the schedule at the beginning of the year, you say, okay, this should be a win. And then you get to that game.
And you're like, and you go, yeah. Okay, still
a win. Should be a win. And then when you look back at this game later in the year,
you're like, yeah.
You don't want to. This is one of those games, like, even the Pittsburgh loss, like, none of us are going to remember that it was Landry Jones. Oh, they lost to Pittsburgh, no big deal, right? Like, it was Pittsburgh. You lose to Cleveland, everybody's going to go, what? Like, Cleveland? Seriously? You lost to Cleveland? So, that's, you know. I don't see it, but I didn't see a Pittsburgh loss either, so what do I know? Like I said, every week, football's dumb. So.
Football is dumb. And with that, we will close the podcast. Football is dumb. I do not have a preview show planned this week with dogsbynature.com. Just the nature of the week after Monday night, getting this show done a day later. So I am sorry, no preview show this week. But we will be back next week for our All Cardinals show. And then we will follow that up after the bye week. We'll be able to talk our half-season review. So you'll hear from us next week and the week after. No preview shows until after the bye. Again, thank you for listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. Signing off. Go Cardinals. Hopefully we're going to be 6-2 after this weekend.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.